going to begin tape number 8. And we're going to start with an episode that happens in this past week's Parsha. We're going to start with the topic of when to put our foot down and how far down to put it and how hard to put it when we have, Rachmana Litzlan, children that are rebellious in our midst. Last week's Parsha, there was an exact case such as that in the home of Avram Avinu, which just goes to show you that no matter how good the parents are, can't get much better than Avram and Sarah, it doesn't always work out as far as the kids are concerned. Atere Sarah as Ben Hogar HaMitzris, Asha Yoldo Li Avram Mitzachek. Sarah saw Yishmael being involved in Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damam, and Avodah Zarah. Now we're following one pshat in Chazal, the one that Rashi brings. Atoimeli Avraham, and she said to Avraham, Goresh Ha'omo Hazois V'yaz Bino, send away this woman and her son, Kilo Yirash Ben Ha'omo Hazois and Beniim Yitzchak, because I don't want him to influence Yitzchak. And this Yerusha that we're talking about here, I'm going according to those Meforshim that say that we're talking about Yerusha in Midas, and in Ruchnius. I don't want this Yishmael to influence Yitzchak. Avram was very upset about this. Upshot him in this. Either Avram was very upset because he heard that his son was involved in these Averis, or two, he was very upset because he heard a suggestion to throw him out. Avram Avinu did not want to throw Yishmael out. Hashem says to Avram, Al yeira ve'einecha al hanar v'yala masecha. Kol asher toimar eilecha sora shema b'koilo. Listen to what Sora tells you. Don't worry about it. Ki v'yitzchak yikari lecha zora. Yitzchak will be your descendant. And this parsha over here, these few psukim, have many, many difficulties. Not the least of which was why Avram wasn't capable of understanding that the right thing to do was to throw out Yishmael. Sora understood it, but Avram Avinu didn't. Now, we all know that we have a proof from here that Sora was on a higher level than Avram Avinu in Nevuah. But the truth is, this wasn't a Shiloh that needed a Navi. This was a Shiloh that needed a Pesach. Here you have a Shiloh of two children, Yitzchak and Yishmael, who are living together. It's possible that Yitzchak would have influenced Yishmael for good, and it's possible that Yishmael could have influenced Yitzchak for bad. What do you do in such a case? Well, besides this parsha right here in front of us, there are many tshuvas written about shailas such as these. In the tshuvas Rabbeinu Yehuda ben Harosh, tshuvas called Zichron Yehuda, which was written by the Rosh's son, he was a Rishon, there's a shaila about koinas, prostitutes, Jewish women, who were in a certain town, that were causing a michshol, stumbling block for the men in the town. There were those who wanted to expel those women from the city, throw them out beyond the city limits. Now, in those days, if you threw somebody out of the city limits, it meant certain death. Like we say in Tfilas HaDerech, outside of the city, there's Chayas Rois, V'chol Minei Peroniyos HaMisrag Shois La'olam. It used to be that between cities was a no man's land. That was very dangerous. And for a few lone women, it would have meant certain death. And so, there were others that disagreed and said that we should not throw them out, because if we do, they're going to die. And they sent the Shaila to Rabbeinu Yehuda ben Harosh. And his answer was, throw them out. He said that these women are causing the men to do Averis. And we have a rule, comes from Chazal. It's called, Godol Hamachtiyo Yoiser Min HaHorgoy. If you make somebody do an Avera, if you make somebody do Averis, that's worse than if you would be running after them with a knife to kill them. And it's an important principle for us to know that somebody who's not frum is 6 feet under. Yeah, there's such a thing as a mensch who's not frum. And if you want to see such people, you go to the graveyard on Bay Parkway, and you'll see so many people that are mentioned but aren't frum. They don't bother anybody. They'll never say a bad word. They mind their own business. The only problem is that they're 6 feet under. And Gadol HaMachtia Yoisim in Ahorgoi means that if you cause somebody else to do Averis, that's what you're doing. You are burying them. Because you are removing them from Chayei Olam, from eternal life, which is much more important than our temporary life on this world. And therefore, these women who are causing the men to do Averis, we perceive them as if they would be running after people to kill them. And you know what the halacha is about someone who's running after his friends with a knife to kill them? They're called a roideif, and the Torah allows us and even commands us to save the life of the intended victim, even if it's necessary to take the life of the pursuer. And therefore, if this is what's necessary to save these men from their averis, that's what must be done, even if these women will die. That's a very, very strong statement, and I want to tell you how strong. I once did a broadcast on the radio discussing the topic of yeshivas and the bacharim that are thrown out of the yeshivas, what happens to them, should the yeshivas throw them out, should they take them in. And I made a statement. I said on the radio that throwing a kid out of yeshiva nowadays, putting a kid out on the street without any yeshiva, without any Torah education, is tantamount to killing him. That's what I said. I received a call from a friend of mine a few days later, a very prominent Rav and Rosh Hashiva, who told me he doesn't think I should have said that. And I said to him, what do you mean? It's true. He says, yeah, I know it's true. Gadol HaMachtia Yoisim in Ahorgoi. And you know it's true also. But the people out there won't be able to accept it. He says, people won't believe you when you say that taking a kid away from Jewish education and throwing him out onto the streets is the same as killing him, even though it's a fact. There's no disagreement about it. But he says to me, you know, I don't think people are ready to accept that fact. It's sad. Whether he's right or whether I was right, it's sad that people are not ready to accept, and even if they are ready to accept, they certainly are not consciously aware of it. They don't really look at things that way. That schlepping a kid out onto the street is like murder, even though it is. Throwing a kid out onto the street is a decision that's dine nefashos. It's life and death decisions. Before a doctor makes a life and death decision, he thinks very, very hard and very, very long, and he better hope that he's right. And he says a kapitel tehillim before he makes the final decision. And taking a kid out of yeshiva and putting him on the street is the same thing. And yet, Rabbeinu Yehuda, the son of the Rosh, paskind that for this very reason, because Gadol HaMachtia Yoisim in Ahorgoi, the fact that these women are causing others to sin, puts them in the category of Roidfim, and we are obligated to save their intended victims, even at the cost of their life. In other words, if someone is a Sakana, is a Mazik, if somebody is a hazard and a danger to others, causing them to sin, first and foremost, our highest priority is to save the victim, no matter what the cost. And so, it's not a tremendous surprise that if you look in the Tshuvas Igros Moshe, you'll find in a few places where Rav Moshe Feinstein Zecher Tzadik Lebrocha paskins that if you have a child who is causing others in the yeshiva a sin, you should not keep him in the yeshiva. One place he says it's asur to admit him into the yeshiva, even if he won't get a Jewish education. Because, and Rav Moshe doesn't say this, but this is the idea behind it. Godol hamachtiyo yoyser min hahorgoy. That's a chazal. Same psak is said over in the name of Rabban Kotler. There were yeshiva once that asked Rabban Kotler about expelling a certain bocher, and Rabban said the rule of thumb is as follows. No matter how bad a bocher is, you have to keep him in the yeshiva unless he is pulling others down. If he's pulling others down, then you have to expel him. And this psak is accepted throughout the generations, Rishonim and Achronim. And the question is, why didn't Avram Avinu know this Igros Moshe? Avram Avinu said to keep Yishmael, even though there was definitely a good chance that Yishmael was going to influence Yitzchak. Maybe Avram Avinu felt that Yishmael wouldn't influence Yitzchak, that he was one of those Talmidim that were very bad, but definitely is not schlepping others down. And according to the Klal Yochar, I want you to know, that's what Sarah saw that Avram Avinu did not know. Sarah saw that Yishmael would not be influenced for the better by Yitzchak. And that piece of information, Avram was unaware of. But we're going to take another approach this evening. Another reason why Avram Avinu refused to throw out Yishmael, even though there was a definite possibility of Yishmael influencing Yitzchak in a negative way. And we're going to preface our remarks with a few more comments about the psukim here. Those last three words, al oidois benoi, Avram Avinu was upset regarding this issue about his son. Those last three words are superfluous. We don't need them. The Ramban asks it, Rashi asks it. Let the pasuk just say, Vayera hadover ma'od ve'enei Avraham. What did we think? That Avram was worried about his cholent? That Avram was worried about his donkey? We know that what bothered Avram was the issue with his son. So what is the pasuk telling us? And then, in the next pasuk, when Hashem tells Avram Avinu, listen to Sarah, because b'yitzchok yikarei lecha zora, what kind of reason is that to listen to Sarah? Because Yitzchok will continue the family name? And let's say Yitzchok would not continue the family name. Does that mean you should keep Yishmael? What is the issue? The issue is, who's going to be called Avraham Zera? Or the issue is Yishmael going to influence Yitzchok or Yitzchok going to influence Yishmael? You know, this psak from Reb Moshe, to throw the bocher out of yeshiva or not to admit him if he's influencing others in a detrimental way, we have to understand that this tshuva that he wrote was written to the yeshiva. I suspect that if the tshuva would have been written to the parents of that child, the psak or the advice, the approach would have been different. In other words, a father has an obligation towards all Jews, not only his son, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazeh, but the obligation that a father has towards his son is much greater and stronger than that he has towards any other Jew. And it's all over Shulchan Aruch. In the laws of Talmud Torah, the halacha is that his son's learning comes before everybody else's son's learning. And the Rambam says sometimes the son's learning comes even before the father's learning. That's an exception to the normal rule that we have, that your mitzvahs take priority over everybody else's. The Rambam says that if your son has greater potential to become a greater Talmud Chacham than you, then his learning takes priority over yours. In Hilchas Tzedakah, your son and your family take priority over others who need tzedakah. And in every what way? Yisheir b'sorcha al tisalei. A person has a responsibility towards his family and towards his son above and beyond that of everybody else. Every father has a responsibility towards his son much more than responsibility towards any other Jew. And let me ask you something. Let's say that it wasn't the yeshiva asking Reb Moshe, should we keep this kid or should we allow the kid to be in the yeshiva? Let's say it was the parent that came to Reb Moshe and said, I have a child who's somewhat of a problem and I'm afraid that outside of the yeshiva he would go off the derech. Should I keep him outside the yeshiva and allow him to go off, or should I find a way by hook or by crook to get him into yeshiva? What right does a parent have to keep the kid out of yeshiva? Parents' obligation is different than the school's obligation. The school has an obligation to the entire student's body together. The father has an obligation first and foremost to his son. It's not a contradiction. There's a story with the Maral Diskin where there was a shaykhit in town and the people started noticing that the shaykhit was getting old. And it was time for him to retire. But he was still a good shaykhit. And you really can't fire a shaykhit al pi halacha. So they went to the Maral Diskin to ask him advice. And the Maral Diskin said, give him a desk job. Make him like supervisor of all shaykhtim. Pay him his salary, but try to get him out of the shlachtos, the slaughterhouse itself. Okay. They went and followed the Maral Diskin's advice. The shaykhit later came to the Maral Diskin and he says, you know, I need advice. The Kehillah came to me and offered me a job behind the desk. They want me to be supervisor of shaykhtim. I know I'm getting old, but I'm still a decent shaykhit. Do you think I should take the job? And the Maral Diskin said, you have to be crazy to take the job. You belong in the shlachtos, that's where you want to be, stay there. They can't force you out. And the shaykhid refused the offer. The Kehillah came back to the Maral Diskin and they asked him, what kind of game are you playing? You told him, stay, you told us to give him the desk job. And the Maral Diskin said, very simple. I have an obligation to give everybody the best advice that's best for them. You came to me and asked me advice. The best advice I can give you is to try to get this man out of the slaughterhouse. That's the best advice for you, to forward your agenda, which was a legitimate agenda. But then the shaykhid came to me with his own agenda and his own feelings and his own request for advice. And the best advice I could give him, for him, is to try to stay there as long as possible. So, it's not really a problem. Everybody in this world has their mission. And sometimes people's missions seem to conflict. Isn't there a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that if you see a poor person, you're supposed to give him tzedakah? But isn't there also a halacha that a poor person, even if he's qualified to take tzedakah, should try very hard to avoid taking it? Even if you can't make Shabbos, Shabbos is like a weekday, don't take tzedakah. So our instructions for the people that can afford it are, give this man tzedakah. And our instructions for the poor person is try very hard not to take that money. It's not a contradiction. Everybody in the world has their mission. And so, when a yeshiva asks a shayla, what do we do with this bacher? The answer is, your concern is the student body, and you as a yeshiva have an obligation to expel him, or not to admit him. When a parent comes, and the parent wants to know their obligation, the parent's obligation is get that kid into yeshiva. By hook or by crook. Now, I'm not saying that the parents should lie or that they're allowed to lie or that they're not allowed to lie. That's a different issue. But the parents, within the framework of what they are allowed to do, their agenda is to try to get the kid into yeshiva. The yeshiva's agenda is to try to get him out. Because everybody has their obligations. And so, now we understand what was happening with Avraham and Sarah. Sarah had a son by the name of Yitzchak. There was also somebody by the name of Yishmael there who was not Sarah's son. Sarah was a parent who found her son being adversely influenced by somebody else in the yeshiva. And she came to the Rosh Yeshiva, Avram Avinu, and said, I want you to take away the bad influence. I don't want him to influence my son. But Avram was very upset with this idea. Al oidois benoi, because we're talking about his son. Yishmael was Avraham's son, not Sarah's. And Avraham was that parent who has a son who's a problem. By throwing him out of the yeshiva here, by throwing him out of the home, he would be yoytze letarbus ra. Even though now he was already on the way, Avram was afraid that if Yishmael would leave the house, he would get a lot worse. Don't forget, Yishmael did tshuva. There's always hope. And the Or HaChaim says this, that Avram's concern was, Lebal yetze letarbus ra, v'yishtakeya be'amunois rois, v'tseitsoi mi beis oviv. Avram's concern was, that even though, listen to this, even though now he was involved in idolatry, and murder, and Gilui Arayus, Avram Avinu's concern was that he would go further off the derech and be involved in Amunois Rois. Maybe it means bad religions. There are other things that he wasn't involved with yet. Soif kol soif benoihu. These are the Or HaChaim's words. Soif kol soif, the bottom line is, it was his son. And this is what he means. It wasn't Sarah's son. Avram had an obligation to keep that kid in yeshiva, in the home. And so he did. And you know what Hashem told Avraham? Ki be Yitzchak yikaru lecha zara. Yishmael's not your son. Biologically he is. But spiritually, the one that's going to be called your son is not Yishmael. You don't have that obligation towards him. That's what Sarah saw in Ruach HaKodesh that Avraham Avinu didn't see. Ki be Yitzchak yikaru lecha zara. Hashem told Avram, Yishmael is not your son. You're not obligated to worry about him. Your greater concern is Yitzchak, who is your son. And so what do we have here? We have here a very important principle. That a parent's responsibility, concern, and efforts should be focused specifically and narrowly on their son above and beyond everybody else. What does this mean? Among other things, it means that those parents that are embarrassed because their son is not the same as their neighbor's children, and therefore they will not take the steps necessary to deal with their child out of embarrassment, those parents are not only not doing their duty as a yid, but you're not doing your duty as a parent. I was speaking the other day to a Rebbe in a certain yeshiva who told me a story about another Rebbe in the same yeshiva who had a son who was a problem. And he asked his... And Rebbe number one asked Rebbe number two. Rebbe number two was the father of the problem child. Says, you know, your son was in my shir. Maybe I'll speak to him. Maybe I could influence him. So Rebbe number two says, Rebbe number one, fine, just don't do it near the yeshiva. I don't want anybody to see. Says Rebbe number one to Rebbe number two, that's the problem. That's the problem. What does this mean? Because you're embarrassed. Therefore, your son may not get what he needs. What if I can't do it only near the yeshiva? Then I shouldn't do it because of your embarrassment. What do you care about what everybody else in the world says? Your focus, your agenda, your concern, and your eyes should be pointed directly and exclusively towards your son and in the eld with the rest of the world. Let the menalim worry about the rest. Your concern is only your son. Now, it is a million times worse than the story with Avram Avinu. Because by Avram Avinu, we're talking about a father being concerned about his son to the detriment, perhaps, of other people. Here, we're not talking about the detriment of other people. Here, we're talking about what other people will say. And you know, it happens so often that parents are embarrassed over their children. Parents are concerned, what will other people say? Where their concern should be directed exactly, specifically, towards their children, they have other concerns as well. Your child has to know that he is first and foremost in your mind. You have to fight for your child. You have to go out of your way for your child, and your child has to see it and know it. If your child smells, and he'll smell it if it's there, because children and parents have such a relationship that the child's nose is so in tune with what the parents are doing. And if the parents have this attitude, the children will smell it. If the parents think for one second that there are other concerns, what other people will say, what other people will do, what other people will think, that are a barrier towards the parent dealing with the child, and that is a violation of the natural relationship between parent and child, and a violation of the Torah obligation incumbent upon the parents towards their child. It's not an easy thing that we expect from parents, this. But it's something that's of utmost necessity. You have no idea what the difference between a child who feels that he is number one on his parents' agenda, that his parents would go through fire for him, that his parents would give up their money, their reputation, their life for the child, as opposed to a child that knows that, yeah, he's important to his parents, but the parents' reputation come first, the parents' comfort come first, the parents' position in the community come first. How much would you give up for your child? How far would you fight for your child? And, more importantly, does your child realize it? Would you go through fire for your child? Would you take a stand for him when he's right, even though it's going to cost you? The idea is that in your life, your child is your primary concern, and the rest of the world does not exist. But their parents worry about them. You have your child, and that is your concern in the world. I was speaking to a set of parents the other day that were looking for a high school for their son. And the son had a problem. He didn't get along in this school, he didn't get along in that school. And I mentioned, how about such and such school? And they said, well, we were thinking of that too, but you know what? This school is a recent school that just opened up, and there was a lot of politics, not surprising, where there was another school in the neighborhood that were not happy when this school opened up. And we're very good friends with the Rosh Hashiva and the staff, the people on the staff of the unhappy school. And it would really be sticky politics for us to send our kid to that enemy school of our friends. Now, these were good parents. These were very nice, concerned parents, but listen to the words that came out of their mouth. And I said to them, look, I don't know yet if this is the best school for your son, but if it is the best school for your son, that's where you send him, no matter how many enemies you make. That's where you send him, no matter what the political repercussions. And we're sitting here, of course. Don't our children come before politics? Don't our children come before our friends? But if you think, and you think hard, it unfortunately doesn't always work that way. Very often, we have other concerns that determine how we treat our children. And I'll prove it to you. Because, well, there's a lot to say about our yeshiva system. A lot to say. And it's not for now. And I want you to know that the yeshivas are the things that save Klal Yisrael from utter destruction. They are like Noach's Teva, Rav Hutner once said. It's like Noach's Teva in a flood of an anti-Torah world. And yet, there's room for improvement in many yeshivas. One of the complaints that I hear from many parents is that Generally speaking, yeshivas are designed for the elite students. And that's what they're looking for. I have a friend, I don't want to say his name, who opened up a yeshiva a few years ago, right here in the neighborhood. And his father is a well-established Rosh Yeshiva. And when you first open up a yeshiva, it's not easy to get talmidim, a fledgling Rosh Yeshiva and a fledgling yeshiva. And so he asked his father advice. He came to his father with an idea. He wanted to open up a yeshiva for the Beis and Gimel students. Not the problem children, not the Mitzuyanim, but for the Beis students. Beis, Gimel maybe. And that'll be their yeshiva. He figured that he'd be able to corner that market because those students would be more comfortable in his yeshivas than in the mainstream yeshivas, and that's where he would get his clientele from. His father told him that he shouldn't dare do that, because if he opens a yeshiva and announces publicly that it's for the Beis and maybe Gimel students, all you're going to get is Dalet Hei and Vav students. Because no parent wants to send their child to a yeshiva that are made for Beis students, even if that yeshiva is the best place for the child. And it's a fact. Many parents would rather send their children to a more prestigious yeshiva, even if it's not the best yeshiva for their child. And they have all the reasons in the world. They don't want their child to be labeled. And they're right, the child probably will be labeled. They're worried about the sister's shidduch. And you know what? Lida, ledavainenu, it may affect the sister's shidduch. That's what kind of crazy world we live in. Well, I'm talking about us now. Not the Rosh Hashivas, not the Gedolim, us. You hear what we're doing to ourselves? Yes, it probably would affect the sister shidduch, and the kid probably would be labeled. And because of all of these shtusim, the kid can't get into the yeshiva that's best for him, and worse, those yeshivas cannot even exist. And I'm telling you now, this is why those yeshivas don't exist. Yeshivas that we are, many of us, are looking for our children, those custom-tailored yeshivas, for our Beis and sometimes Gimel students, will not exist because of us. But you know what? Sister Shidduch is important. And the label on the child is important. And sometimes, listen, all of these things, a label can ruin a kid. But our main concern is our children. Sometimes parents are embarrassed because they meet their friends in the street, and they say, well, where do you send your children? Remember a chassan sitting around a table, my child goes to this and this yeshiva. Ooh, what a great yeshiva. My child goes to this and this yeshiva. Ooh, another great yeshiva. Then comes you, my child goes to, you. What did you say? No, this and this place. What's that? Oh, it's a new yeshiva. And the little snickers from the other parents, because we know that yeshiva is made for Beis students. And parents feel bad about that. But you know what? Parents' responsibility to do the best for their children. Even if they're going to get snickers, and I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, you will get snickers. And your child may be labeled, and you may be labeled. And it may be a public embarrassment. To a certain extent. Because all these things do happen. And it's the reality, the unfortunate reality of our generation. And maybe other generations, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, that's the way it is here and now in the United States of America this year. Very often, these factors prevent us from giving our children what they really need. They prevent us from doing what's best for our children. And there we fail. It's not easy. Parents have to work hard to support the children. Parents have to go through a lot of emotional pain while bringing up their children. And this is just part of Tzar Gidol Bonim. Because our obligation is towards our children. You know what we have to do, what we have to imagine? We have to imagine, like the Rambam once gave advice to his son about regarding a different issue. But that advice applies over here. Imagine yourself, you're in Noach's Teva. Only you and your family. And that's it. Nobody else in the world exists. That's all that there is. Now what would you do for your son? Nobody's going to speak about you. Nobody's going to do anything. You're in Noach's Teva. You and your children. And there are two things in this. Thing number one is that it really has to be this way. You have to give your children priority, no matter how difficult it is, socially difficult. And number two is that the children have to know that it's so. Children have to know that if you had a choice to do what's best for them at the expense of certain social prestige, you would always choose them over the social prestige. Because if they think otherwise, then you know what? They act the same way towards the parents. Sometimes children have friends and they find it difficult to say no to what their friends are asking them to do. And maybe their friends want them to do something that's not right. And we expect our children to say no, to take a stand, to do what's right, and not follow the bad crowd. But how do we expect them if we bow to peer pressure, because that's all it is. Not adolescent peer pressure, but adult peer pressure. We bow to adult peer pressure at the expense of our own children. And if we want our children, people ask me this all the time, how do I get my children not to bow to peer pressure? There's a way for parents to set an example. Yes, parents don't have friends trying to convince them to go to the movies with them. And parents don't have friends trying to convince them to do all these things that their children have. But there's peer pressure with adults too. And children know that. So your children know that you are top priority on their list. If not, what you want is not going to be top priority on your children's list. That's number one. Related to this issue, related to the issue of having your children priority on your list, is a very sticky issue that many parents have with the yeshivas. And I'm not talking about a child who's holding by being thrown out of yeshiva or a child that needs to get in yeshiva. We're talking about very common occurrence where a child gets into conflict with the yeshiva, maybe with the Rebbe, maybe with the Menahel, and the child is right and the Rebbe is wrong. See from your faces that at least in many of your minds, you've experienced it. Now, if I'd be speaking to the Rebbeim, they may have different faces when I say this. But we all have to do what we feel is right. And the Shaila is, how do you respond? On one hand, you don't want your child to lose respect for his Rebbe. On the other hand, Rebbe's wrong, or the school's wrong. And it happens, it happens. Rebbeim are human beings and Menahelim are human beings. And as a Rebbe, I can tell you, not as a parent, we make mistakes. And how do you react? Well, you are between a rock and a hard place. And in order to be able to respond properly in such a way that will not exact a great price from your child, parents have to develop a certain midah. And it takes a long time to develop, and children have to understand that it's there. It's called the Midah of Emes. The idea is this. There are certain times when a Rebbe is going to misjudge a child. Maybe he's going to think the child did something that he really didn't do. It happens where there is somebody breaks into the dining room at night in the yeshiva, and maybe somebody tells on a certain bacher. Maybe there's other evidence pointing in that direction, sufficient for the yeshiva to believe it, but maybe it really is not true. It happens, it has, this particular case has happened. And maybe it's, maybe it can happen to one of us, Rachmona Litzlan, because it's not an easy place to be. It's very important for the child to know that he's not being labeled. Very often, children are labeled by yeshivas as troublemakers. Sometimes it's a label that they may deserve. I'm not saying it's good to label them, but at least they earned it. Sometimes they didn't even earn it. I know a case of a 10-year-old boy, brilliant boy, one of the brightest boys you'll ever meet. And he would get straight olives. In 1 year, he was in a shir with a Rebbe, and he just didn't get along with the Rebbe. There was a major personality conflict. Now, with the benefit of hindsight, this Rebbe is not teaching anymore. That's because the yeshiva made that decision. But this boy, who didn't have much zitzfleish to begin with, and discipline was not his strong point, well, his weaknesses really, really came out. Next year, it was a shaila about which one of two rebbeim to give this child, which class to put him in. And although he was always in the higher academic class throughout his life, the boy was in sixth grade. When this year came about, they wanted to give him the Rebbe that muns more from the children, the tougher Rebbe, even though academically he wasn't as good an educator as the first Rebbe. And the parents and the school had a major conflict over this. What was happening was that the school had branded this child in a certain way, in a way that he did not deserve. And the school was ready to put the child on a different track for the rest of his life, perhaps. That's not an exaggeration. For the rest of his life. Because of this personality conflict between the Rebbe and the child, I told the parent, you make sure your child goes to the other class, because your child shouldn't dare think that his lack of success that particular year was his fault. It will shake his confidence, confuse him about himself. He won't know anymore what's going on with him. He tries, it just didn't go. Do you know what it is for a child to try and meet with frustration? It's frustrating. It's confusing. It throws a child for a loop. Your child should know that it was not his fault that he wasn't successful. In such a case, it's so important for the parents to make the child understand, yes, this Rebbe was wrong. He may lose respect for his Rebbe. Here it's a former Rebbe, so that's a halbitzara. But it's better for a child to lose respect for the Rebbe than lose respect for himself. That's my opinion. There's nothing wrong with a Rebbe making mistakes. And it's bad for a child to lose respect for his Rebbe. It is bad, but it's the lesser of the two evils between that and a child losing respect for himself. Now you have to be very careful, because sometimes this backfires. And what happens is that the child uses this as an excuse to discredit and discount anything the Rebbe or the yeshiva says. The child will say, look, the Rebbe, he doesn't know what he's doing. My parents even said so. And that's why I said before that parents have to cultivate, before this happens, parents have to cultivate a midah of emes, of truth, which means this. For certain parents, that the child is always right. Whatever the child does in the yeshiva, the child is always right. There's certain parents that whatever the child does, he's always wrong. The Rebbe is always right. There's certain parents that it's always 50-50. Look, it takes two to tango. Look, you're not 100% right. You're not 100% right. You do yours, the Rebbe will do his. All it is Baba Mises. Children will respect the Rebbeim and the authority figures if they realize that they are given a fair share. If they realize that if they are wrong, they're going to be told that they're wrong. If the Rebbe's wrong, the parent is going to say, I'm going to speak to the Rebbe, you seem right over here. If the Rebbe's wrong, you know what? Children gain respect for a Rebbe when he asks mechila for a child, not vice versa. Parents ask me constantly, how do you gain your respect back from your children when you lose respect? And these parents invariably are always so scared, if they do something wrong and if they make a mistake, to admit it to a child. That's a very big error. They're afraid of losing respect by showing that they made a mistake. The child knows you made a mistake already, and he knows you don't want to admit it. This is a shayla in the Tshuvas HaRambam. A shayla about a Rebbe that once accidentally offended one of the students in a class. And the shayla is if the Rebbe has to ask the student mechila. And the Rambam said, definitely yes. Definitely yes. Of course you have to ask the student mechila. Don't we have halachas that we have to follow too? Don't forget, we have to be role models. Yes, the Gemara says in Rav Chadoyma Alecha L'malach Hashem Tzavokoy Sivakesh Torah Mipihu, your Rebbe has to be like an angel, Rebbe has to be put on a pedestal, and this is all true. But what I'm saying is, not to lower the Rebbe off the pedestal, that the Rebbe will remain higher on the pedestal if the child sees that he admits when he makes a mistake, as opposed to a Rebbe that won't admit he made a mistake, and the child knows the Rebbe made a mistake. I'm not saying take the Rebbe off the pedestal. I'm saying how to keep the Rebbe there. Children lose more respect for Rebbeim and parents when they don't want to admit they made an error. You want to put yourself on a pedestal? You want to get your children's respect? And be a respectable person. And respectable people admit when they did something wrong. If a parent makes mistakes, a parent falsely accuses a child of something and later finds out that it's not so. The parents that are going to be scared or reluctant with the child and say, look, you know, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I really am, I apologize. Can you meichel me? I guarantee you, not 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 times, unless there's a major problem, the child will say, of course, of course, of course. What lesson does it teach that child? I'm asking all of you now to envision such a scenario. What lesson does that teach a child? You're in a mess. You falsely accused your choshed v'ksheirim, your son, your daughter, of something they didn't do. And now what? You have a choice. Either to try to shove it under the rug and say, okay, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. We all make mistakes. And go back into the kitchen. Imagine how your child's going to feel, what impression he's going to get out of that, and the respect that he's either going to gain or lose for you through it. As opposed to a different scenario, when you sit down and say, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, we all make mistakes, I know you're hurt. Are you meichel me, please? You don't have to beg, maybe not please, but you get the idea. Which parent do you think is going to be more respected in the eyes of the child, in the long run and in the short run? Machloikis over here is not if the parents should be high up and in a pedestal in the eyes of the children. The machloikis is just how to get the parents there. My experience is that those parents who treat children the way they would want to be treated themselves have more respect from their children than those parents who don't. And there's a bonus in this too. The bonus is that your child will grow up with self-esteem. Because children lose a tremendous amount of self-esteem if they feel that they don't stand a chance in this world. I had a mother and a father came to me in the office with a child. They didn't know what to do with him. The child was diagnosed as had a learning disability, the ADD, it's called, attention deficit disorder. They know what to do with him. They send him to, they were semi-chassidish people, they sent him to a semi-chassidish yeshiva here. It didn't work, so they sent him to Eretz Yisrael, to a place in Bnei Brak. Very intense. It was totally not for him. They mistreated him there, they didn't handle him right. They weren't equipped for a student like that. They sent him home. He was so depressed at his failure everywhere. And at the end, he just dropped out of school. And the parents and the child were in my office. And the question was, how to get this child either back in school or back on track? And I asked the parents, I said, you just told me a story. The parents just told me this. That the place in Bnei Brak was not for him. They were not capable of handling him. Maybe they're not to blame, but maybe the parents are to blame. You don't send a child to a yeshiva that's not for him. Not every yeshiva has to be for every student. Maybe the yeshiva's to blame. I don't know. Forget about blame. The fact is the child was misplaced in that yeshiva. I asked them, did you ever tell your son, who was sitting right in front of my desk, did you ever tell him that it wasn't your fault that you messed up in Eretz Yisrael? Did you ever sit down with him and say, you know, the yeshiva, you were misplaced there? I don't know, maybe the yeshiva's fault, maybe our fault, parents talking. But did you ever tell the child that it was not his fault that he messed up in Eretz Yisrael? I said, no. Well, tell him. Tell him. If a child constantly thinks that he's failing, that he's messing up, what do you expect him to do at the end? You expect him to keep fighting losing battles? Nobody wants to fight losing battles. He believes that he's incompetent and incapable. Tell him it was not his fault. He has a certain type of learning potential that it's not easy to put him in a right yeshiva. Tell him, we will find you the right yeshiva. This was the wrong yeshiva for you. Not the pshat that it was a good yeshiva for you and you messed up. They threw him out of the yeshiva. Not that you messed up. It wasn't the right yeshiva for you. It wasn't your fault that they couldn't handle you. The child was never made aware of that. The child was never made aware of that is a major problem. Therefore, although, generally speaking, as a rule, under good circumstances, under non-crisis circumstances, children have to maintain a tremendous level of respect and admiration. Admiration is a more important word here, for their rebbeim and for their yeshivas. And sometimes, I'll tell you the truth, I side with the yeshiva and the as much as I can, because it's very important for the children not to lose the admiration. However, if the child is in danger of losing his respect and admiration for himself, then chayecha koidim, then your life comes before anybody and your self-respect comes before anybody else's. Then mishpat takes over, the truth takes over. Now there's a way to buffer this, as I said before. If from the beginning, parents were always fair with a child, explaining to him what's right about what they do and what's wrong about what they do, they will be able to accept the rebbeim making a mistake or the yeshiva making an error without losing admiration or respect. I know many people who maintain the highest level of respect for their rebbeim and their yeshivas. But they understand that nobody's perfect. And there's a fringe benefit to this. In the Sefer Pachad Yitzchak, the volume that has Rav Huttner's letters, he writes over there that we make a very big mistake. But he doesn't say it's a mistake. He says it's a sickness that we have. That we try to portray our gedolim as perfect beings. Perfect beings means, he says, for instance, the Chafetz Chaim didn't speak Lashon Hara. We give our children the impression that the Chafetz Chaim was born the Chafetz Chaim. Not so. The Chafetz Chaim did speak Lashon Hara. He says the Chafetz Chaim, in his battle with the Yetzer Hara, went up slowly but surely. Perhaps a lot quicker than we could, but it was slowly but surely. He had defeats, he had downfalls, and he lost many battles with the Yetzer Hara. But he kept getting up and fighting the Yetzer Hara. If we teach our children that Rebbeim, that Torah Jews, that authority figures are perfect, they know that they can never attain perfection. And when they see that they are imperfect, they automatically feel that they can never reach the level of greatness. And that's what Rav Huttner says is a big mistake. We should teach our children that everybody has a Yetzer Hara, and a gadol is somebody that's constantly fighting his Yetzer Hara. A gadol is somebody that's constantly fighting the Yetzer Hara and never gives up. And when he falls 7 times, he gets up the 8th time. Life is a struggle. This way our children will be able to feel that they have a chance at greatness. And that's a fringe benefit to all of this. We can't separate our children from their potential. And if we teach them that our authority figures are their parents, everybody's perfect, then they're not going to feel that they have a shot at attaining this perfection. And that's a very big problem. So to sum up this evening, before we take questions, there are two major principles that we discussed. Number one, that our children deserve and need the narrow focus of all our efforts and all our concerns. And our children must know that everybody else is second, and they are first in our lives. No matter what the cost, they are first. Nothing else matters. They're important. Everybody else is secondary. Kol Yisrael Areivim Zeh LaZeh. But your children are first. B, we have to maintain a balance between our children admiring the authority figures that they encounter versus our children understanding that when they do right, they are right. There has to be a balance maintained. And the best way to maintain this balance is if from the time the child is little, the parents always have this balance in their house. But under dire circumstances, when a child is in danger of losing his self-esteem and his self-respect and giving up, then chayecha koidim. And the admiration for everybody else, maybe it'll go out the window, maybe it won't. That's the chance you have to take. Under emergency situations, emergency measures have to be taken. Now we're going to take questions. The minig over here is that if there are any questions from the women, they write it down on a piece of paper and hand it up to the front. I see we have many papers. Could you do me a favor and please pass those up? Question. We want children to feel that we are on their team. However, aren't there some situations where a parent must play king of the castle to enforce a rule or a belief that a child doesn't understand or is too immature to believe in yet? Example, choice of school. 100%. I spoke last week about children needing to understand that the parents are on their team. And the question is, fine, but shouldn't parents play king of the castle sometimes and demand that children listen to them? Well, the answer is of course. Although king of the castle isn't the way I would put it, I would put manager of the team or coach of the team rather than king of the castle. Every team has players and every team has a ruler, a king, a boss, a manager, a coach, whatever you'd like to call it, and those are the parents. The point of being on the same team, I said, is that the children have to understand that if they're failures, then the parents, if they lose, then the parents lose. If they win, then the parents win. So that they don't involve themselves in a tug of war such that child feels, well, if I'm frum, if I go on the derech, that means my parents won and I lost. If I go off the derech, that means I won and my parents lost. That's danger because nobody wants to lose. Children have to feel that if they become B'nai Torah, their parents won and they won. The way to do that is to make them feel you're on the same team. But who runs the team? Of course, that's the parents. How much of an issue should clothing and hair length be, especially when a child says, isn't it the inside that counts, not the outside? And he says, who cares what people think? I'm from on the inside. Okay, we're going to deal with the isn't it the inside that counts taina first. That taina is one of the biggest shtuyot that you're ever going to encounter in your entire life. People put tefillin on the outside. Imagine if somebody would say, well, I don't want to put on tefillin because that's on the outside. It's the inside that really counts. Makes absolutely no sense. The Torah says you put on tefillin, you put on tefillin. If you don't put on tefillin, it's a problem with your inside. You know, it's like a doctor sees a mark on a person, Rahmanul Itzlan, and he diagnoses the person's having cancer. He looks on the outside and sees what's going on the inside. This taina comes up mostly with girls, by the way, where girls have an excuse to wear their short skirts and various different other sneis violations by saying, well, I'm from on the inside. Boys have to put on tefillin, girls have to put on long skirts. It's as simple as that. It's a halacha just like any other halacha. It has nothing to do with inside or outside. And the answer is no. When the Torah says that you have to control your outside, it's the outside that counts. If you have a problem, take it up with the Rabbeinu Shalom. It's not a question of the inside versus the outside. Besides, it's your midah of tznius, which is on the inside, that just shows up on the outside. Now, this is something that is going on in kids with teenage-itis, American teenage-itis. This really, really is a major problem because there are so many kids that have this tina. The best way to deal with it is, before the kids ever get to it, head it off at the pass. Teach them that there are people that have such ideas and it's wrong, and explain to them why it's wrong before your children get old enough to ever claim this. I gave a shiur in my shul for 7th and 8th grade girls this past week. The parents of some 8th grade girls, 7th grade girls just got stuck in over there, asked me to do it because they're deficient in hashkafa. And this is the first thing I taught them. I taught them, I said, you're going to go through high school, girls, you're going to hear people say, well, I think what I'm doing is okay, I'm still a good person anyway. The authority of the Torah is supreme. If a person violates a halacha, it doesn't matter if he's eating macholas asurois, it doesn't matter if he's not putting on tefillin, it doesn't matter if she's wearing a short skirt. That's the Torah says is wrong. Not even wrong. Wrong is the wrong word. Torah says it's asur, it's prohibited, it's forbidden. If you do it, it's a chasaron in your neshama. Your neshama gets affected. Your neshama's on the inside, not the outside. Now, as far as these clothes are concerned, there's no isser. We're talking about a boy, I believe, in the question. Hair, type of style of clothes. There's no isser involved in that. But the idea is this. Yes, the boy is not Ili Arai is Shvichas Tamim and Avodah Zarah oriented because he wears another type of clothes. If you want to know how alarmed to be by it, you have to figure out why he wants to wear this type of clothes. Is it because he wants to make a statement and show that, no, I'm not like my parents, I'm not like the rest of the family? Which he may not be. Maybe the whole family are big Talmidei Chachamim and he's not cut out to be that. Sometimes a child needs to feel some sort of visible or tangible difference between him and the rest of the family, and this is how he shows it. If that's the case, better don't even bother dealing with him with the clothes all that much. Rather, you should try to find other ways for him to satisfy his inferiority complex with the family, and the clothes will change. There is, though, something to explain to the children about this, and that is as follows. Yeah, clothes are on the outside, and it's only clothes. But can you imagine a baseball team where the pitcher is wearing a uniform of some other team, or he's not wearing a uniform at all? It doesn't mean he's not a good pitcher. He could really, really do well. It's just clothes. That's ridiculous. We as Yidden, and not only Yidden, we as B'nai Torah are a team. Just like a uniform on a baseball team sends a message to everybody in the audience, it shows where you're standing. A uniform, clothes, a flag. All these things send a signal to people and it makes a statement about where you're standing. Your clothes do too. And you can prove it to them. Because these kids that have this taina may not understand or may not be willing to understand how much of a statement clothes make. But you just point out to them how much of a statement they themselves believe that a person's car makes. Oh, this guy must be cool because he has this fancy red sports car. This guy's a nerd because he drives a Rambler. It's only a car. It's only chitzonius, isn't it just the outside? We all believe that outside symbols make statements. The only question is which outside symbols you are willing to understand. And which language you are willing to accept. Kids do it all the time. And even clothing. A kid that wants to wear clothing, not the way his family wears, the chances are, I'd put money on it, he also understands this in a different way. You tell him, you walk into the street. Let's say he wants to wear, for instance, I don't know, jeans and a t-shirt. Okay? He finds other people, a group of friends. Six people. Five of them are wearing jeans and a t-shirt just like him, maybe with slight variations. And the third one is wearing, I don't know, bell bottoms, platform shoes with a straw hat. Okay? He's going to look at him like he's crazy. Certainly not going to want to be friends with him. Even though it's only chitzonius. Chitzonius, that's all it is. They understand that Gan's good. Believe me, they do. This guy's cool because he has a car. This guy's cool because he dresses like this. These kids know it themselves. Don't be fooled. Don't let them pull the wool over your eyes and believe that they have this some sort of philosophy or this idealism about outside and inside. First of all, it's a toys, the whole thing, as I said. But they don't even believe it themselves. They use this outer trappings concept in many other ways. They themselves. That's why they're so careful how to slick their hair back before they walk out on the street and meet their friends. You know, it's only chitzonius. That's why they're so careful to put on the makeup properly before they go out in Matzah Shabbos ice skating. It's only chitzonius. Depends what you want to look like. It's not a question of looking good or not good. The question of fitting in. And the shaila is, who do you want to fit into? Whose team are you on? Whose uniform are you wearing? And that's what you should do. You should throw this back in their face. What you have to do is you have to listen to your kids. Listen to when they talk about the friend's cars. Oh, how they judge a person by what he drives. And listen to what they when they speak about the hairstyles and the clothes. Listen carefully and register it. So that when they come back to you, you'll be able to tie it back to them. They don't believe it. Believe me, they don't. Are there any other questions? I'll repeat the question. What happens when a child says, my school says I'm not allowed to wear makeup and you wear makeup? My school says I'm not allowed to wear a colored shirt and you wear a colored shirt. Now, truth is, those are two totally different things. Because even the school that says you're not allowed to wear makeup, that's only because they're only because of the girls. It's not that they hold makeup as be'etzem wrong. The white shirt, that would be a taina. Now, what? Length of dress. If that's the case, you know what? The kid's right. The kid's 100% right. I want to tell you something. I had over here in Flatbush, it was the saddest case that I've ever encountered. There was a girl. Happens to be, she was my student in school. I was her teacher. She went off to Derech. Very simple. And at the end, she ended up getting locked out of her house by her parents because she went to visit a friend, female, that the parents didn't approve of. Not that they disapproved. They just didn't know enough about her to give their haskama. The girl stayed for 10 months on the street, eating out of garbage cans and sleeping in alleyways. What do you expect to happen? A 15-year-old girl, now she's 16 already. Parents, I begged them. They have... They're in this neighborhood. I called their Rav, sat down with them, begged them. They're not interested. Now, what started this whole problem? You think these parents, what? Major religious fanatics? Halavai. Not at all. The girl told the principal of the school, says, look, my mother says I'm not allowed to wear short dresses, but she does. My parents say I'm not allowed to watch television, but they have one in their room. And they say that they're allowed to watch. My parents say I can't go to movies, but they go together. A likely story, right? I remember the principal asked me to call the parents and deal with this. And I called them and I said, okay, look, this is what so-and-so says. What's your side of the story? They say, you know, she's right. The Dina's right. That's what they said to me. We're allowed, look, we drive a car. She can't expect to drive a car. We have relations with each other. She wants to do that too. Parents are allowed to do things that kids can't do. So we can go to movies and she can't and we can... You hear this? I explained to them, I said, my friends, I said, the reason why you can drive a car, the reason why she can't drive a car is not because driving a car is intrinsically wrong, but because she's not old enough to be able to handle it. And the same thing with the other thing you mentioned. But if you're telling her not to go to movies, it's because you believe movies are wrong, according to the Torah. If you tell her she can't wear short dresses, it's because you believe it's wrong. If you believe it's wrong, you shouldn't be doing it. It's two totally different things, apples and oranges. Nicht reingegangen in Kopf. They wouldn't accept. I told it to them. The principal did. The girl's therapist told it to them. And we all came up with the same thing. This is outright hypocrisy. And it's enough to drive a child off the derech. Now, interesting, because this girl has a brother who is running around in his summer camp. He's so fafrumt. He's running around in a summer camp telling the 10-year-old boys that on the basketball court they're not allowed to wear shorts because it's not sneezdik. He runs around stealing Hershey bars from people and throwing them in the garbage because it's not Chol of Yisrael. So they both went off, but just in different directions. And it's no wonder if this is what kind of house they grew. You're 100% right, you who asked this question. If you have one standard of Frumkeit, don't send your children to a yeshiva with another standard. I'm not telling you what standard to have. But if you're going to be, let's say, yeshiva Flatbush standard, don't send your son to Mir Yeshiva. But the matter is, maybe you should. But don't expect to have a wonderful parent-child relationship with him after they teach him in yeshiva that everything that you're doing at home is wrong. Now, maybe you disagree with the yeshiva, fine. But your child is going to grow up learning this. Maybe you're right, maybe the yeshiva's right, whatever you want. It's very important for children to have, for parents to send children to the yeshiva with the same standards as they have. If the parents are interested in maintaining the child's respect. Because the yeshiva is going to teach children what's right and what's wrong, despite what they learn at home. Listen, when I was in yeshiva, now it's different. When I was in yeshiva in high school about 20 years ago, college was a very big issue. And many of our parents wanted us to go to college. Went to yeshiva here in Chaim Berlin. Many of our parents wanted us to go to college, and the yeshiva was trying to discourage it. And there are many conflicts at home. And there are many children that just rebelled against the parents because of what the yeshiva said. Do I have a problem with that? Not at all. Did the parents? Yes. And if the parents didn't want that to happen, they shouldn't have sent their child to such a yeshiva. Now, maybe we're going to say, Baruch Hashem, the parents weren't aware of this, and the children grew up perhaps to become great Talmidei Chachamim. Whatever, it doesn't make a difference. But if the parents want to maintain their standards of Frumkeit for the children, don't send them to a yeshiva that has different standards of Frumkeit. It's very simple. But you're right. A child comes home and says, well, the school says I'm not allowed to wear short dresses, but you wear it. The child is right and the parents are wrong. And the question therefore is, what does a parent do if they're wrong? Tshuva. That's it. There's no other answer. Any other questions before we go? Have a good night, everybody. Thank you for coming.